his brain is no longer working. He hangs out with RFK. He probably also has the brain worms. You know, you need to get on that front foot.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Blue Sedition Podcast. I'm here with my co-host, Mike. What's going on, Mike?
Oh, just doing the thing.
Just doing the thing. We're here. We wanted to do a quick episode, just a little temp check. A little temp check of the swing states. A little check on checking out on the polling. I've heard some rumblings. People are scared out there. Are you scared? Mike, are you scared?
I'm never scared, but I'm always surprised by how insane things seem to be. So I probably should be scared.
I think everybody should be scared that things are apparently so freaking close, right? Like, mm-hmm. It seems like this is really a coin flip.
Yeah, it does feel that way, I will say. Being, you know, a more progressive Democrat for the last 20, 30 years, whatever it has been, it feels like that my cynicism has taken over. So I can't be afraid because I have to say things like, well, I knew it was going to be this way. Right. But I am, you know, worried every time I open the polls.
I remember, you know, voting for Obama and just knowing it was over. It was over. It was Joe.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, I know. Yeah.
And in 2016, something happened where I was like, this don't feel right. This isn't adding up. And I remember you and I were talking the night before the election, and I was like, or the night of the election before the polls started coming in.
Yeah, I recall we were doing a live podcast before Blue Sedition. You were recording, and I came on as a guest, and we were watching polls close from East Coast, you know, obviously to West Coast, and we were seeing in live. This is obviously during, you know, COVID conditions. Ostensibly, I don't think they were quite there yet, but people were prepping for it, and this is 20 I'm talking about. And we weren't certain what was going to happen in Georgia. I think you were the most worried, or maybe I was. It's harder.
I think we were both pretty worried.
And we're like, Georgia's, because they stopped reporting updates in Georgia. And Trump was ahead so many votes. And, you know, the hours went by and we kept going, well, Georgia is the last one to close. And he needs Georgia. Otherwise, you know, and I remember there. We had to sign off. We were like, I don't know where this is going. And we checked in the morning and they still hadn't tallied them up. And we didn't have a good response yet of like what was going on.
It was.
And so we're going to have more of that, you know, this time around too.
It's going to
be
for sure.
Especially in Georgia, there's going to be more of, oh, election night's closed. And if it comes down to Georgia, it's going to be days and weeks or months of, we don't know who the president is.
Yeah. Yeah. I was having flashbacks of, hanging chads, you know, like it always feels like to me, and this is probably, like you said, you're a little bit pessimistic, but it always feels like to me when things like that happen and there's a hold or it's going to come back Republican in some way, you know, it's.
Well, yeah. I mean, we both were there for the hanging chad thing and that felt like I was much younger then. And so my cynicism hadn't quite kicked in yet, but that felt like a slam dunk. I was like, oh, Gore won that. Gore's going to win Florida and it's going to be over. And then as the days go by, you go, why are we still, why hasn't this been resolved yet? You know, it makes its way all the way up to the Supreme Court and they refuse to do anything about it. I'm like, you're throwing out legal votes that people placed because paper didn't get severed correctly. Are you kidding me?
It's unbelievable.
I think I'm with you. I think that was the moment politically where you know, my mirror was shattered and I was like, oh, there are no adults. We're all out here on our own.
Yeah.
We gotta fend for ourselves.
Yeah, it's been getting worse and worse for me ever since.
Yeah.
Okay, so pessimism, cynicism, whatever aside, I guess let's start yeah, looking at.
I think that I'm an optimist. I think a lot of us want to be optimists. We feel that way. I think that we're all probably, especially if you're listening to this podcast, probably just a little bit jaded, and it's probably causing you to feel things with a healthy amount of cynicism at first blush. And I think that's the way that I would describe how I approach or how I feel about things. I think you're probably similar, but maybe you're a touch less optimistic. I don't know. What would you say?
I don't think I'm very optimistic. I know. Oh. Yeah, no, I don't think so. I mean, we talk sometimes, and I feel like I have those days where I'm feeling hopeful and optimistic. Sure. But I feel like those are fewer and farer.
And they don't hit as good as they used to.
They don't.
That optimism's a drug, I guess, is the point there.
Yeah.
All right. So give me something to get optimistic about here.
Well, I'm gonna take down the page that I'm currently on then, because that's nothing to get optimistic about. Uh-oh. Let's take a quick look here at Pennsylvania.
So we're gonna look through some of the most recent polling results.
Yeah, that's the one everybody's currently talking about right now, because it sounded like there is some excitement, right, in Trump land that the real clear polling aggregate has flipped to Trump for the first time in a while. And if you take a look at the aggregate polling, it was heavy Trump. Especially when it was still Biden. I mean, Trump was plus six in July. It looked like Pennsylvania, at least according to the polling, was going to be a slam dunk for Trump. And then Kamala showed up and things turned a little bit. So the recent polls coming out of Fox News, take that for what it is. Atlas Intel, take that for what it is. And the Trafalgar group, which I'm not sure what
they're Republican affiliated. They're a think tank that's run by the Republican National Council Committee, excuse me.
So I think their polling rating might be a little bit lower than the others. But those are the most recent polls that have come in, all sort of right-leaning polls, and that has brought the average up a little bit for Trump. And so now, according to RCP on, what are we, September 30th here at 4 p.m., Trump has a 0.2% edge point edge in the aggregate polling. I don't think this means anything. What are your thoughts?
I mean, you got to look at this graph, and it's like you were saying, it's about energy. It's about, getting ahead of steam, and I don't know what this graph tells me. So obviously, listeners, you're not seeing this graph. There's a big red hump there between May 1st, and it peaks around mid-July, like Nate said, and then it starts tapering off, and then we're down here today, September 30th, and it's this coin flip. But I mean, this at its peak, it had Trump at almost 49, and it was polling against Biden at the time, obviously, at 43.5. And you can see that that's when it started turning. There was a split where Biden withdraws, and that big head of steam that Trump had, or maybe put a different way, that complete lack of energy that the Biden campaign was showing at that time, completely flipped over and turned on its head with this Harris camp. Just taking over and really setting out clear messaging, campaigning, stumping in the right places. Although she was in California last night, and that's a waste of her time, and she shouldn't do that, even for donor money. But she's in swing states by and large, where Tim Walz is, and they're doing good there. So when I see this, what I think that this tells me, obviously, is just the lack of energy the Biden team was bringing. And that's probably one of the reasons why the insiders are all telling him he probably should drop out. And then you see that just,
narrow margin here where Harris gets bumps every couple of weeks, Trump gets little blips every couple of weeks, but it's, I mean, Harris's biggest difference there is a plus one to her or plus two to her, depending on whose poll you're looking at. And so I don't know. I think right now we're still calling Pennsylvania a toss up, but you can definitely feel the energy has completely shifted.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. Let's move over to Georgia. Georgia, again, kind of the same situation. It looked like Trump had a fairly healthy lead, but then here comes Kamala. So right now it looks like Trump again has a couple point lead in the aggregate polling. But, you know, some of the things I find interesting, Fox News has Harris plus three, which I find strange.
Yeah, now I'll point out that one, as compared to their peers, is a smaller sample size. So they didn't have as many live voters that were actually calling it. It's a sample size of about 700, as compared to the CBS and Alice ones, which are 1,400 and 1,200 respectively. So, yeah. I mean, obviously, the more people you get, the more diverse generally the outcome. But, I mean, going from the Fox poll of 700 to the CBS poll of, 1,400, that's a 5-point swing just from doubling your polling position. So I think that Harris plus three from Fox, I'm probably calling it an outlier. If you look at the way that Georgia has historically voted, and especially in the run-up to an election, with polling like this, I personally don't think Georgia's in play. I don't think that if I'm the Kamala team, that I'm going to put a bunch of resources there, because I don't see the ROI there. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's going to be October 1st tomorrow, right? Do I know how the 30 days rhyme works?
I do. I don't think it's, it's October 1st tomorrow. I thought you said September 31st in my head.
No, October 1st tomorrow. So that gives them a little over like 45 days, about 40 something days leading up to it's the 4th. I'm completely wrong. Like 34 days, 33, something like that. And that's 1 month of hard poll or of hard campaigning. And I just, given the numbers, I just don't know that I'm going to put that many resources in Georgia. I'm going to put some TV spend there, but I don't know that I'm going to really push on it.
So I'm going to show you something interesting here. This is from one of my favorite red, least favorite places, 538. last election cycle in 2020, we had a very, very similar looking chart here until October 1st.
So you're right. Okay. Just so the viewers are aware of this, we're seeing a graph now from 538, and they're doing their polling ingest and then their sample projections. So this is the 538 model. And the graph goes exactly like Nate's saying. It's mirroring exactly what I just described of this minor red hump the whole way through. And then October 1st, for whatever reason, blue pulls ahead 2 or 3 points across the spread. And at the end, they're up by, what is that?
One point and a half. Yeah, yeah. And then, as we all know what happened, eventually Biden takes Georgia.
So what happened on October 1st that we really think that anything changed? Or was it just literally now it's time to start campaigning hard and he started actually spending money there?
It could have been absolutely that. The focus started heading towards Georgia. But I don't remember. I'm trying to think if anything special happened there. And I'll point out, by the way, the Trafalgar group on October 31st through the 2nd, that right wing group that you can even see the right diamond. This is a partisan pollster for the Republican Party, had a 5-point advantage for Biden. So when they start coming through and they're saying it's plus
that's a 5-point disadvantage.
I mean, for Trump, I meant. So when they start coming through and saying, 1 point, 2 point lead for Trump in Pennsylvania over Harris, I'm not buying it.
Yeah. Now, again, we've got to talk sample size there. That traffic group polling methodology only had about 1,000 selectants in it.
if I'm not going to include these Survey Monkey ones because they're Survey Monkey, but you know, Landmark Communications is half that, and they're showing the same sort of numbers. Insider Advantage, the same sort of thing. So it's the other problem is that a lot of these big polls that are run are paid for by either think tanks or like, you know, like you say, partisan parties. And so the smart money isn't wasting, well, I shouldn't say this, but it's more like you don't want to spend your potential campaign contributions on a poll. If it's a push poll, say, that just gives you notoriety, it gives me a +2 going into that last week leading up to the election. You know, that sometimes is worth its weight in money, but sometimes you need to do that on ad spend. You need to put that in, you know, on cable TV, or you need to put it in the radio. You need to buy some billboards. So I don't know where that best goes.
Yeah. Well, just to, for all things equal, I'm bringing up the 2020 polls for Pennsylvania, and Biden had a very, very healthy lead the whole way. And of course, Biden ends up winning Pennsylvania. But it's certainly so much closer in the polls now than it was in 2020.
I agree. I think that it's interesting because we still have this extremely new dynamic of, again, Biden withdraws, Harris wins the nomination, who's the presumptive runner. And so you see the polling results and just the general feel as it goes, it swings back toward that mid-mark. I mean, to look at it at the worst position Biden had in Pennsylvania leading up to 2024. He's, you know, in mid-July, he's losing to Trump 49 to about 44. And then he drops out, and within 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you know, it's back to a coin flip. And I'll say in the short term, the noise has been mostly blue. It's been not big. It's, you know, plus almost a point in several cases, but the big blips have been blue. And then otherwise it's coin flips, Bill. So I'm hoping that we see something like we did in 20, where they start doing their campaign push for real. They start spending actual money to start driving, you know, ad buys and time slots on cable networks and things like that, just to try and get that blue number a little more bolstered.
Right. So I want to move to North Carolina because I have a lot of things I want to say about North Carolina. But first I want to look at the 2020 polls. And we know, we see from the polls, from the average over, you know, the 6 months leading up to the election, Biden had pretty much a 1 or 2 point lead the whole way. It never really flipped to Trump. And Trump ends up winning North Carolina.
Yep.
Which, you know, I think I've always thought of North Carolina as a red state. It goes to show you that these polls, you know, Biden was leading the whole time, 2 point lead. And then look what happened. So the margin of error for polls, even these aggregates, is still 3, 4, 5 points. So when you're in that range, you have to call it a toss up, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm with you. I think that Georgia and North Carolina specifically, they are lean right, and they have been for years and years. I think that Trump's first term and the Biden, you know, return to an old white guy campaign of 2020 really was more a testament to I'm voting for not Trump than anything else. And so I think that North Carolina was definitely in play. Like you're saying, you know, polling averages within the standard error, it's coin flip. And the same was true in Georgia. So it's like either one of them could have gone either way. And I guess as a country, we're just sort of lucky that Biden got that Georgia poll out.
Yeah.
But also, you know, I know we want to focus on North Carolina for a moment, but just to talk about some others that are in similar situations, Arizona and Nevada were the same way. I think that historically they're leans right.
but they have been, you know, in the last two decades sort of surprised us a couple of times by being blue. And it's in large part due to, you know, the bigger, more metropolitan, you know, epicenters of Democrat voters. But they can shift that. That's just goes to show you that if you can let people vote, and they are energized to do so, then they can swing those states for the blue pretty easily.
Yeah. I totally agree. I'm thinking in terms of North Carolina, there's one other thing that may sway the vote there. As we mentioned in one of our previous episodes, we talked a little bit about Mark Robinson.
Mark Robinson. We got to talk about him.
We got to talk about Mark Robinson. So, right now I do have up the presidential poll numbers, and there was a very, very wide gap. I mean, I got to tell you, first of all, just looking at these, Biden dropping out was literally, I mean, the race was over. I don't think there was any question Biden could not win.
Yeah. No, I mean, the polling still so far out from the election, you can almost make the argument that the incumbent has an advantage once they're in campaign mode, but it was getting too close. I mean, you're talking mid-July. We still weren't certain he was going to recover. He was speaking poorly in public. He wasn't performing well at any of at the first debate.
Terrible debate.
He didn't. I mean, and you know, I'm not trying to dogpile on Joe Biden, but he has no energy. He is elderly, and you know, we're asking him to do this Herculean task of running for president. That is it's a very difficult thing to do, to go out and campaign and stump every day and try and drum up.
Yeah.
It's very hard. Young people, I mean, I like looking at the old photos. Obviously, it's like a meme now, but you remember the pictures of Obama when he first started running?
It's just like his last
shot. You're like, this man is 8 years older and he looks like he aged 60 years.
Yeah. And I mean, we remember Clinton, Hillary, she wasn't well in 2016. And because of that, she wasn't traveling as much. I mean, we remember that she wasn't showing up to the swing states. There was that conspiracy theory image that went around where she had passed out and got put into a black SUV. SUV. And she just wasn't doing well. And I remember Bernie Sanders was out stumping for her. They tried to get all the big heavy hitters out for her. And eventually it hurt her in the swing states. And I don't think Biden could do what Kamala and Waltz are doing right now.
No. I mean, it's night and day. They're younger. They have more energy. They're still able to do drugs to get more energy if they need to. I mean, you know, poor Biden. If he did a bump of cocaine to try and help him on a stump speech, he'd die.
Man, so, we're never not going to earn that explicit rating, I don't think. I think
we need our viewers to understand some things here. Okay, this is hard stuff, and you do what you need to. I mean, everybody likes to dump on Trump for crushing up Adderall, but you know, you do what you gotta.
I'll tell you what, I don't like that as somebody who you know, had to be on Adderall for a long, long part of my life. I do hate it when the left, and I mean, go after Donald Trump. I don't give a shit. Like, go after him for whatever. But I don't like it when people start using like medication like that as, oh, look at this Adderall. No, don't do that. Don't do that. But at the same time, that whole when they go low, we go high. No, fuck that. When they go low, keep kicking them. Make sure they don't get back up.
We really need the establishment, and to their credit, limited, I think that they have seen that. At the very least, the Harris campaign has seen that there's a shift in politics now. It definitely is a culture war. You can't put your fingers in your ears and blah, blah, blah it away. You need to fight this nonsense, these relentless attacks and conspiracy theories and things, and you need to treat them like the childish nonsense they are. You need to attack your opponent on that front and call them a weird person who is saying just garbage. Like, you can't stand on this. The American people will see through his nonsense, because that's proven to be a losing strategy. You need to get out there and be like, that's bullshit.
this man is telling you nonsense, and his brain is no longer working. He hangs out with RFK. He probably also has the brain worms. You know, you need to get on that front foot. And I think that that was the thing that I was hoping the Democrat Party would see after 2016, is that, you know, you love to posture yourself in that party as, you know, like you said, when they go low, we go high. And I'm like, you're not playing against an opponent of the same old rules. You're not going against Reagan. You're not going against George W. Bush. You're going against a crazy person who will say whatever it takes to win. And that has proven an effective strategy. You treating him like another adult doesn't work.
That's, you know, that's a really good point. Something that's been going around over the weekend and today is there are clips of Trump talking about Harris being, you know, being born mentally impaired, you know, saying all of this. Yeah, just saying all this ridiculous crap. And you know who that really plays to? Immature 21-year-old frat boys. You know, it plays to that group of people, right?
It does. You know, I think even more so than that, I think even younger. I was hanging, this is a strange anecdote. I was picking up my son from school, and one of his classmates, I forget what had actually transpired. I think my son said something like, I'm not voting for Trump, or like, Trump's a crazy person. Something like, you know, he hears me and he says something like
that. Yeah, sure.
And his classmate is like, oh, I'm voting for Trump because I'm, you know, I'm not a beta, whatever the kids say. And
right.
Just
right.
Says all this nonsense. But it's the same sort of thing. It's this grandstanding of I'm not, you know, I'm an alpha male, blah, blah, blah. So I'm going to vote for Trump. And it's reaching areas outside of the political sphere that I just hadn't either. I've never seen it before because I wasn't really looking or listening, or. You know, it hadn't gotten there before. I don't remember in my lifetime, you know, even the other kids on the playground being like, "Oh, I'm gonna vote for, you know, Bush or whatever."
Yeah, I mean, I remember being in fifth grade, I think it was, for the first Clinton election, okay. And we all just followed along. We were all just very mm-hmm. interested in it, right? There was no hatred on you know, there was nothing like that. But
right.
where I was going with that, though, is do you think Harris could pick up votes if she would just say shit like, this guy's a fucking moron, you know?
Yeah, I think that she's maybe rightfully wary of actually doing that, but we have seen Walls, at the very least, going campaigning into more social media aspects. He's hitting like TikTok. He's going on Twitter. He's hitting these traditionally Republican holdouts of politospheres and just going out there and berating them for being like, look at these fucking weirdos.
Right, right.
And he's unafraid of saying it. And so I think you're right. I don't know if it plays to Harris. I always worry that she's going to have the same sort of stigma that Clinton, Hillary had running of like, you start saying negative things about your opponent in certain ways and you become, you know, this hag. I don't have the right, you know, word that.
Well, they're already calling her a hag. I mean,
sure. But
I know the basket of deplorables was like, oh my God, the left said one bad thing and they ran with it, right? Like the
yeah.
basket of deplorables became their rallying call. While on the other side, Trump is constantly hammering, berating, everybody's low IQ, everybody was born right. mentally impaired, I'm the smartest guy. And you know, the left can't even run with one of those because he says so much. What do you even do? How do you even?
No, I think the same phrasing just keeps working. I think you call out just how weird that is, because that's the weirdest thing ever. If you were a kid on the playground and the other kid that is your, you know, enemy or whatever says he has a higher IQ than you, all the kids look at him like,
so talking. So listen, sure. Though it's true, all of the people that think that it's weird, they're already voting for her, right? Like we don't.
I don't think that's true.
You think the weird campaign helped?
I do. I think that there are. I think there are politically agnostic people out there who do not vote regularly. I think that they showed up in 20. I think that they came out and they're like, I don't like voting. I don't like being a part of this process because of how ugly it is, but I'm not going to have another 4 years of Trump. And they came out and voted. And I think that if you can get that messaging to them again of being like, remember what you did last time? I need you to come out and vote for us because we're not weird. I think that you need to just be like, they're still weird. He's getting weirder. I think that that would be a good messaging. It's just being like, he started by saying he didn't know whether I was black or Indian. Now he's saying, you know, I'm mentally retarded or whatever it was he said specifically.
Right, right.
And you just parrot it. You just say, here are his words. It's fucking weird, man. And you just get loud about it in, you know, suburbs and stuff where people don't vote.
Well, that's it. I think that's just the one thing that I think this campaign is missing. Just hit back harder. You got to hit back harder. And I feel like they're not doing that. But I mean, they're doing a lot right. I mean, I have been really, really impressed with how Harris and Waltz are running this campaign, with the things that they're saying. The debate to me started a little bit rocky for Harris. She was clearly a little bit nervous, probably having never met Donald Trump, being around him. That is he's you know, he's a piece of shit, but he's a larger than life person. Right? Like,
yeah, for sure.
So that must have been a little bit jarring. But once she got settled in, I mean, it completely took off. So before we wrap here, I just wanted to go over the gubernatorial race.
We need to talk about Robinson. I got us off North Carolina. I need to talk about Robinson. I need to talk about the black Nazi in the room.
I
gotta know, how's his polling going?
The polling, you know, is
the weekend after the news breaks that he is a self-proclaimed black Nazi.
It's not good, man. It's not going well. So let's go back to May. Okay, nobody's heard of him. Nobody's heard of Stein. Nobody's heard of Robinson. They don't care. It's +5 for Robinson. It's +2 for us. +1 because it's a red state, right? Like, it's a typical red state. You know, it's a battleground state, but it's typically red.
But it's down ballot in a means right state.
Sure,
so that's understandable.
Let's fast forward a little bit to after the whole black Nazi stuff started coming out. Double digit turnaround. We're talking +14, +11, +16. Most recently, CNN +17 for Stein. I mean, holy, have you ever seen something this drastic?
I've never seen a political meltdown quite this bad. And you know, what's funny is that this not the black Nazi thing, but a similar sort of thing was happening around. Oh, I'm going to forget his name. He was in the House up until last year, and then now I think he's in jail. I don't know. George Santos.
Santos. He's not in jail yet, because I was just in a Twitter space with him the other day. It was unbelievable. But anyway, go on.
But he had sort of the similar thing, and he ran, I guess he was probably up in the midterms in 18, I think, is when he was elected in originally, because they would go 4 and then he was out in 22, right?
That sounds right.
And so but I mean, it's the same thing. It was like all this news kept breaking about him, about being this crazy person and making up stuff and lying and blah blah blah. Didn't touch his ratings. His ratings could not be, you know, assaulted by fact like this. So to see this in real time and see the actual, you know, the comeuppance for once is very, you know, it fills me with joy. I love seeing people reap what they sow.
And I am hoping, one, this turns out a lot of support just against Robinson. Like, people that might not have even voted are just like, all right, I'm just going down ballot Dem because this Robinson guy is insane. And it's, I mean, you saw in the presidential polling that with Robinson also came that additional support for Kamala. You can't really tell, because it also kind of happened around Biden withdrawing, you know, those things kind of all happened around the same time. So it's hard to track exactly, but it definitely looks like there is going to be a lot more down ballot blue voting because of Robinson. And that's beautiful.
That's beautiful, and that's it. And also, I mean,
his big, I mean, the fact that this came up to bite him so hard in the lead up is very good for the Harris campaign. If I'm the Harris campaign, I'm thinking North Carolina's back in play. All I got to do is buy some ads that hit, you know, these non-typical voters and show them. I would say, you know, Robinson is a self-proclaimed black Nazi, and he is Trump's pick. Trump wants a black Nazi governor in North Carolina. So then you're running double stuff there, right? Because you're focusing the down ballot. You're saying vote for Stein, don't vote for the black Nazi, but also don't vote for the guy who backs the black Nazi.
Yeah,
and maybe it comes back into play. I mean, you know, it probably still is in play. It's a coin flip.
But yeah.
I mean, I might put serious resources there because it's the same electoral votes as Georgia. I might actually divert Georgia to North Carolina, thinking that that's more in play than Georgia.
I think, we brought up earlier, I think all of them are in play. I mean, Arizona, I think, is the one that is starting to lean heavier Trump than any of them.
But all the recent ones have very small sample size. I still haven't seen anything that takes into account Maricopa County. You know, the big blue holdouts, they're not polling them.
Yeah.
Because they know how they'll go.
Yeah.
So they're calling out to the edges. They're calling around the suburbs. They're not getting the big ticket metropolitan holdouts. So.
Well,
I just called Maricopa County a metropolitan holdout.
There you go.
Way to go. Way to go, Arizona.
The last thing I'm showing here is the RCP Electoral College map, which has 104 electoral votes as toss-ups. This race is crazy. I still can't believe that this is close at all. But here we are. But I want to say, because one thing I want to ask you is, and it's okay if you want to hold off until the next episode or, you know, spend some time to think about it. But I'm seeing two things on this map that make me start like rubbing my hands for the future. And I want to ask you, what's your biggest upset for election night? What do you think is going to be the shocker on election night?
Man.
Yeah, you want to kick that can. That's fine.
I do want to kick the can. I think that I think that if Harris Camp can take North Carolina, I think that'll be the shocker. I think that'll be the one that breaks it open. This map, the 24 RCP electoral, has Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota all as toss-ups, which I'm not seeing at the moment. I think that Minnesota, Michigan, and Wisconsin at the very least are lean blue, probably blue.
Yeah.
Pennsylvania's like barely lean blue, like maybe toss up. North Carolina's toss up. Georgia, I would say, is lean red toss up. Same with Arizona and Nevada. I think, especially since those first two finish early, Pennsylvania and North Carolina, we're going to see them closing early. And if you can, if the Harris camp can knock out both of those states, I think the other one's just coming to landslide. Because that would be so disheartening if you're an Arizona voter and you see North Carolina and Pennsylvania completely drop and you're standing in line.
Yeah. I mean, that would be beautiful. But I don't think I think the likelihood of those being called before.
Yeah, before midnight.
Yeah, is very, very unlikely. Especially it's going to be interesting because there's a little bit of play here with the news stations that are doing the reporting and kind of calling it, because if you call this race too early, well, that's it. Your viewers are going to bed. Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a little bit of like, let's not call this just yet, but there's also being the first to call it and being right is also huge. So
yes, they are at the very least being pulled by two different, you know, opposing but both worthwhile forces that are going to try and get them to at least report correctly.
Yeah.
You remember in 20, I think everybody had called Georgia for Biden,
projected. No one was willing to put their name to it. And then Fox News called it officially. They're like, Fox News is calling Georgia for Biden. You're just like, what world am I in right now? I'm like, CNN, MSNBC, where are you guys at? How is Fox getting ahead of you on this?
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
That was the upset, because I remember how crazy all the pundits got when Fox called it, because it was election night, and it was bananas.
So I want to.
If you want an upset like that, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, that would be the. The upset, not the upset, but like the big everything goes nuts news cycle worthy stuff.
Well, everything goes nuts newsworthy cycle, like the Trump faction would never live this down, is there are three states on here that are only leans Trump. They're light red.
True.
And it is a shocking thing to me. It is Texas, Florida, and Ohio. Can you imagine, can we go back to a time where Florida is at play? Can you imagine Texas turning blue?
They'll never let it happen.
They'll never let it happen?
If Texas, because the other problem is if Texas goes blue, then presidential elections are over.
It's over.
Or the electoral college system is over, because it just can't win that.
Well, I mean, the Republicans can't kill the electoral college system either, because they you know, once in 30 years have they won the popular vote?
Right. It's the only thing that keeps them in power.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I think it was
Ohio is interesting because it's considered out of play. And I think that, you know, we talked about this in the last episode. We sort of assumed that Ohio is out of play because Vance is the home favorite. So you expect the ticket to go that way. But Vance has been just doing so poorly that I'm not sure he's helping.
Well, I'll say something that's shocking is that in the RCP average, Ohio is leaning more Trump than Texas is. Okay, so Ohio has an Trump has an 8-point lead in Ohio.
Yes.
And in Texas, 5-point lead.
Five is getting to.
Hey,
it's within the standard error. I mean, like that's play, but not quite. It's not gonna happen.
But imagine
it's a couple of decades from being possible.
I don't know, man. You get the right candidate, and I could see Texas flipping.
Yeah,
especially who do the Republicans run after Trump? Now Trump. If for those that don't know,
we're going to spend an entire episode on.
Okay,
engaging that at this time.
Well, I just wanted to point out that Trump did say he will be done if he loses this election. He's not running again.
No, he didn't. Did he say that?
Oh yeah, he did. Yeah,
I missed that.
Yeah, this was a week ago. Maybe he came out and specifically said if he loses, which is weird of him to even say, if he loses this election, he's not running again.
I mean, he's 78, so he would be 82 at the next election anyway. I mean, like I said, this is a grueling thing, and I think it's really showing in his rallies where he just starts talking and then I think his brain turns off, and like I think that he is tired and a little addled, and he's suffering the same things that Joe was. It's just it's hard to do day in and day out and really stick to your messaging. And his biggest thing for the last 100 years has been vamping. He'll go out there, pick something to talk about, and just start blathering, but at least keep his energy up, at least keep his direction correct. Even if what he says makes no sense. His direction and his energy were his two biggest things. But even now, I mean, he's losing that thread as he's giving these stump speeches.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Well, I know, like you said, we could talk about this forever. We've hit the 45-minute mark here, where we actually talked earlier, and we were like, let's do a quick election vibe check.
This is our quick episode, yeah.
This is our quick vibe check.
We just wanted a lightning round where we checked in the temperature of the polls that have been coming out over the weekend.
Yeah, and this is what happened. So I do want to ask you, we'll do a couple of these, because, again, you know, we're still 30, 35 days out, whatever it is. gun to your head. I shouldn't say that in America, but gun to your head. Who wins this election?
Oh,
now this is you know September 30th.
My heart says Harris. Yeah, and my head isn't sold on that yet. I think that Harris has. I feel more.
You sound like you're struggling.
Promise. I feel like there's more promise with this Harris campaign than I did on October 1st in 2020.
Okay.
On October 1st of 2020, I was convinced Biden was just not going to do it.
Yeah, that's a really
and
really
then like point. We were saying as we went over these averages and we started looking historically, that last month, that October 1st push really turned it around for Biden in 2020, and I'm curious to see how Harris can do in that same shadow. I want to believe that Harris can pull this one out.
They have the data. I would say, okay, check with me in 2 weeks. We're going to ask again 2 weeks, and then we'll ask again. We'll probably have a day before the election podcast as well or whatever. Yep. If, you know, gun to my head and I had to pick one, I'm saying right now Trump is winning the election.
Wow.
But hopefully in 2 weeks, I will have a different take on that.
Yeah, I think right now, gun to my head, I just you're going to get me at different times of the day. I'm going to feel one way or the other.
Yeah.
But I think it's a coin toss to me. I think right now it really feels like a coin toss. But, you know, like you said, we'll check in again in the weeks to come and we'll see how that temperature fares. We'll see what we feel when we get there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks so much for joining us, everybody. This was our very quick, short episode. We will be back on Wednesday. We're going to do a post VP debate episode. We'll cover all the highlights from the VP debate. I'm excited. You know, it's for sure things are going to come out of that. I don't think that JD Vance will say they're eating the cats, they're eating the dogs. But if Laura Loomer is still on the debate prep team, you might see something like that.
I'm really excited for it. I said this in one of the previous episodes. I think that Tim Walz is going to be good at pushing Vance's buttons, and I'm really looking forward to our Wednesday episode. I want to do the recap of that. I'm excited.
All right. Thanks everyone for joining us, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye.